Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM.
Hello, and welcome to Alaska Edition on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Ellen Lockyer. Alaska has somewhere between 5 and 6,000 nonprofits, and their important role in supporting community needs throughout the state is undeniable. Today, on Alaska Edition, we'll be examining that role and how it has grown over the past half century. First, let's introduce our guests. Susan Foley is interim president of the Alaska Community Foundation, which works to strengthen the financial health of the state's nonprofits through philanthropy. Hello, Susan.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
And Sarah Scanlon is deputy executive director of Rural CAP, which has a wide variety of community assistance programs throughout the state and is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Ellen. Thank you.
And Hillary Morgan is CEO of the YWCA here in Anchorage, which has certainly expanded its role since the start of the national organization more than 100 years ago, although Anchorage is 25 years old. Hello, Hillary.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Okay, thanks for coming today to be with me on Alaska Edition. Let's get right down to it, because let's talk about what exactly defines a nonprofit. And first of all, I found out this little detail. The original nonprofits are something like 3,500 years old, and there were two of them in Turkey that long ago, and they were educational institutions, although we don't know how the IRS handled it then. So today in Alaska, there are so many, and there's a wide variety of social needs that they fill. So, and we want to know how you describe a nonprofit. That's such a term that people apply to any number of things. I mean, Associated Press is a nonprofit, Alaska Public Media is a nonprofit, so is the Alaska Zoo, and Chugach Electric. So people get confused. Do they not make money? Or do they, you know, what do they do? So let's start with Sarah Scanlon. And I was going to ask you, because Rural CAP has such a vast number of programs, especially in the bush. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about what Rural CAP does?
Sure. And as you mentioned earlier, Rural CAP is celebrating its 50th anniversary. We were created by the War on Poverty back in 1965, LBJ's program. And over the years, of course, we've evolved, and from being a whole number of things, we were able to create a bunch of nonprofits around the state in the early days that led to the creation of the land claims, passage of the land claims, or helped pass that with the many leaders from rural Alaska that came into play at the time. Head Start is celebrating also its 50th year, which we still currently do today. Weatherization came in the 70s, energy programs. One of our current main initiatives is health, substance abuse, youth well-being, elder well-being. So we have a number of programs. Housing is the other huge program that we do right now. We are, another 50 milestone is the self-help homes on the Kenai. We're just completing our 50th this year. We do transitional housing, permanent housing. We will be adding another 148 units here in Anchorage to our stock of affordable housing for low-income people. So those are the kinds of programs primarily that we're involved in today throughout Alaska.
So do you consider yourself a charity per se, or a community advocate?
We are a mission-driven organization, okay. Mm-hmm. And we are about healthy people, vibrant communities, or sustainable communities and vibrant cultures. So we attract people to come to work for us because of our mission, but we really are about direct services to individuals who are in need, low-income individuals. We were in 65 communities, for example, last year with just under 800 employees throughout the state with a $43 million budget. So charitable, we are mostly state and federally funded. We do raise funds a little bit, but we have to be very careful about that because we are a government-funded organization. So we are funded also by our for-profit subsidiary called Rural Energy Enterprises, and it contributes about $100,000 to RuralCAP to help us run our programs throughout the year.
Wow, and as the name implies, you're very important in Bush, Alaska. In fact, I always thought you only worked in Bush, Alaska, and I realize over the time you have broadened that scope.
Mm-hmm. One of the other things that I think makes us has allowed us to survive for 50 years is our partnerships. And no one of us can do it alone. We have to work with others. We are speaking more now about collective impact, especially in a time like we're seeing in Alaska today with the reductions in revenues for our state. We're all going to have to do better with less and work together more closely for that collective impact, I think, that we all want to see that makes the difference in our state. We, you know, in our communities that we're in, we have tribes, we have village corporations, we have city governments, we have borough governments, we have regional corporations, churches, a number of Boys and Girls Clubs out there throughout the state that we have close allegiances and alliances with, again, because we cannot do it alone. So that's, I think, what makes us be the success that we claim, but not just by RuralCAP, but it's with all of our partners out there.
Right, and over the years that you have been in existence, I think 50 years ago, there were social needs that weren't even thought of yet, such as recently, I believe RuralCAP will be operating the Safe Harbor compound for homeless.
Mm-hmm. That's the addition of the 105 units that we will be adding to our affordable housing stock. And we're also moving towards wellness with youth throughout the state, not just in rural Alaska, but everywhere through our Elder Mentor Program. Mm-hmm. And one thing that we've come to rely on and learn and use more is social media and technology. Now that GCI and others are expanding their services out there, we are able, for example, to watch a classroom in Savoonga from our Anchorage headquarters. So in times of tight revenues, we are having to learn that we're going to have to cut down on things like travel. It is still so expensive to get out there. So we have technology abilities now to connect. And with all of the regulations that we are faced with, that is one of the things we're going to have to do is figure out how to meet those regulations at lower costs because of the cuts to our budgets.
Right. And well, with the changing demographics of the state and, of course, the changing technology, sometimes the technology saves you money, but the expansion of your mission, though, must add a financial burden. How do you deal with that?
As with any organization, I think we all have to be careful about mission drift. RuralCAP has stayed to its core of providing services that meet the assessments that we have been done informally, but this year, for the first time, we now are required to have a formal assessment, needs assessment. So we've done one, and we are the board has approved it. So we use that to guide us in our work, so that we don't just, as some people say, chase after the money. We're really about mission and meeting the mission and the vision of the agency. And we will stick with what we've done well: Head Start and early childhood and family development, housing, weatherization, health services and programs, and of course, those, we have to remain flexible. We can't just stick and do the same old thing over and over. As times change and as the needs of our clients and customers change, we have to change with that. So, and there have been many, many new things over the years that have come to our attention. Self-help, the ability of people to, for sweat equity in their own homes, homelessness in Anchorage and other parts of the state, not just Anchorage now. We are seeing that about 80% of our clientele in our Housing First and other related projects for chronically homeless, 80% are Alaska Native. So what we're seeing is a huge influx of Alaska Native people from rural Alaska into Anchorage. But I want to also note that our clientele in those properties are all ethnicities. Anchorage has, 93 languages spoken, 97 languages in our schools. So the ethnicity of our clients and customers has grown also. And how do we accommodate that when we speak mostly English here and we have to respect what they speak?
Right. Yeah. So RuralCAP is not static. It's growing, it's flexible, but it's within its parameters. Let's turn to Susan Foley, because the little segue from how do you pay for it all leads right to you. Susan, tell us something about the Alaska Community Foundation.
Well, the vision of the Alaska Community Foundation, it's Alaskans who are supporting Alaskans to create a sustainable environment here in our state and to improve the quality of life for everyone here. And we do this in a little different way than either the YWCA or RuralCap does, in that we tend to be a hub where people can place money that they want to have do good out there in our Alaskan community, and I define that broadly in every sense of the word. And then they can see to it that that money is going to be used in ways that are appropriate to help others. And sometimes people give directions about how they want to have that money spent. Sometimes they say give more broad instructions. They might say, I want to have it do good for health care purposes. And then they rely on the Alaska Community Foundation to help make decisions about how the money will be funneled out. We also focus on endowments, and that's a little different from some of the funds that are raised out there. An endowment is the one that all of us know best is the permanent fund dividend, where we as Alaskans receive distributions from the income of the permanent fund dividend. The same concept applies to endowments, and they can be placed at the Alaska Community Foundation so that there's a way of helping the long-term sustainability of a lot of our organizations. Now, we are not there yet. We're not going to make all of our organizations that are important in Alaska sustainable right now, but it's a vision that is shared by people all over the state and by people outside of the state also.
Well, one of the questions I prepared was, why would nonprofits need an organization such as yours to help them manage long-term financial health? But, and I honestly wasn't really quite sure what your organization did. So do you solicit donations, or do you take the finances that nonprofits have already gathered and then guide them on investments?
We take money in several ways. Okay. Individuals can make contributions to the Alaska Community Foundation. If an organization wants to establish an endowment, as I'll use Hillary as our example, since the YWCA is in the process of establishing an endowment there, it gives them an opportunity to have those funds be doing good for the organization, but they don't have to worry about, they should be concerned about how those funds are invested, but they don't have to handle the day-to-day tasks involved there. And so that's another way that Alaska Community Foundation works, is by supporting nonprofits with their endowments. And then we also receive grants that come in from outside of Alaska and from even our state government. And we are able to then disperse those funds out in ways that help Alaskans. One of our projects right now, it has a number of partners, and we are helping with the improvement of domestic violence shelters all over our state. There are 16 or 17 shelters that are being helped in this way, and that is very much a community endeavor among different private foundations, some money from the state. The 4-Acre Group is working on that, and of course there are the domestic violence shelter directors that are involved as well. So it's a place where we can help get good work done when you need to have a lot of people involved also.
So your organization would sort of maybe consolidate some of the the seeking of funds, the administration of funds, rather than, you know, X number of organizations going out and doing it individually. That's, you would sort of corral the money stream into, and maybe predetermine which has the most need.
And that's one thing that we can certainly do. The other thing that we do that I think is crucial in our communities across Alaska is we try to act as a convener, a place where important conversations can be held in a safe environment, and where people who might not on a day-to-day basis end up in the same room together can respectfully have a dialogue about issues that are important to them. And those issues are very broad and very extensive. We have affiliates in 9 communities across the state, and there are volunteers in each one of those communities who serve on a board for their community, and they also help with convening important discussions in their community. So it's all about what issues are most significant at any given time.
Right, and domestic violence is a huge issue,
yeah.
Homelessness a huge issue, alcohol abuse a huge issue. So this way you would sort of maybe put the most where it's most needed. I was going to ask you another question. Is the, I think, rather large number of nonprofits in Alaska, is that a deterrent? Does the, you know, they all depend on donations, public funds, state and federal grants. I mean, you know, 5,000 people asking for the same pot of money. Is that, does that hurt nonprofits in general?
Well, there are so many nonprofits across Alaska that serve so many different purposes. And if you are a nonprofit that is successful and continues from year to year, that means that people are supporting you in some way. And being a nonprofit doesn't mean that you are there to go under, you know. You still need to make enough money to sustain your organization. So if they're around for a long time, it's pretty good indication that there are enough people who have an interest that that work get done, whatever it may be, and they are sustaining the organization. That said, it is my thought that it is always good to look for the most efficient ways to get work done. And you do that by having people who are really good at whatever it is work together and use their great brains. And sometimes that happens by having nonprofits work together. And the encouragement that I think all of us need as Alaskans is that we're very much into individuality here. I can almost say that word, individuality. And it's great to celebrate our individuality, but it's also great to look at where we overlap and where we can work together.
Thank you. That was very enlightening. And let's turn to Hillary Morgan now, because she's representing the baby of YWCA. He's only 25 years old in Alaska, but your organization nationally goes back to 1858, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I am sure the role has changed drastically. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us something about what Alaska YWCA does?
Yes, so the back to the 1858, though, that the YWCA started really as it's the first and oldest women's organization, largest women's organization in the country. And the YWCA's mission is to empower women and eliminate racism. Actually, eliminating racism, empowering women is how our mission statement goes. And so the YWCA over the years nationally has been, we were at the forefront of the 8-hour workday for all people, but for women as well. We were at the forefront of some of the civil rights movement issues. So the YWCA's history is really one of seeing a need and making global change around that need. In Alaska, the YWCA started in 1989 and began as the YWCA of Anchorage. I took over in 2011, and that year we decided to expand to the rest of the state. So we now are YWCA Alaska, because clearly there are many areas where eliminating racism and empowering women apply to the state as well. So we became a statewide organization, and what Susan said about sort of determining whether you continue as a nonprofit is really important. And any good CEO who starts at a nonprofit, really the first couple of years, you should spend to determine whether or not the nonprofit needs to continue. And so that's what I did. I looked around and made sure that anything that was being duplicative, we stopped doing if we weren't doing it as well as another organization, or talked to other organizations who did that. So now we have an organization that that does things that really other people do not duplicate in Alaska. And just like Rural Caps, I used to work for Rural Cap for 9 years. In fact, started the housing program there, bought the first, 16 units. Mm-hmm. And our mission is very broad. You know, we could start a women-owned laundromat, and it would still be within empowering women and eliminating racism. And so our mission is to, basically, we believe that if women and people of color are self-confident and have their health needs addressed and are economically independent in some way, or that those are the people who then have the opportunity to become leaders, and that leaders are the ones who create social justice changes in the world. And so we have 5 programming areas that feed into that. We have youth empowerment, wellness, women's economic empowerment, women's leadership, and a social justice element. So I think that the question about this 5,000 to 7,000 mm-hmm. nonprofits, what Susan said is really true, that we work together a lot more. We're doing a project with Rural Cap right now, and we work with a lot of organizations in town. And this is a small town. I just moved back here from New York City, and you know New York very well, Ellen. And it's easier to really work together in Alaska and to make collaborative decisions. So nonprofits really understand that we can't do business the same old way. And then I just want to add one point about the endowments, because it's important, is that an endowment, you give the money to the community foundation, but the organization only gets about 5% spinoff from that. So for instance, Mary Louise Rasmussen started an endowment for women veterans. Mm-hmm. And we adopted the Alaska Veterans Organization for Women 2.5 years ago. And so they designated that money for the first 5 years, the dividends of the money she put in would go to the YWCA, but after that, it can go to any organization that is serving women vets.
Right. We are getting close to our cutoff time, and I wanted to get a couple of burning questions in. Yes. What's your biggest challenge, Hillary, for your organization in Alaska, number one?
I think the biggest challenge is to stay current with the needs of the people, right? So our Alaska Veterans Organization for Women is perfect. They were looking for a place to be housed. They fit within our mission perfectly, dealing with military sexual trauma, and there wasn't another women's organization around. And so I think staying current, another one of our big initiatives that really only the YWCA can do because we're so large, is we've been talking about the gender pay gap in this country since 1963 and mm-hmm. probably before then. And so we decided that we would take that on, and we're the first state in the union, in the country, to say that we're going to eliminate the gender pay gap in Alaska by 2025. And we have, 10 more years to get that done. And our organization can do that because we're not so specifically targeted that we're only
working with abused women or only working with women who are raped or, you know, now voting women and stuff. So I think that that the biggest challenge is really to make sure you stay current, and that if you are addressing the needs of the community, then, as Susan said, you'll find people to fund it.
Right, and as a wise man once told me, a nonprofit is not a tax-free status. A nonprofit that doesn't make a profit is not going to do anybody exactly. any good. And there's 39,000 people in Alaska working at nonprofits, and yep. they have a big, strong voice for public policy. We are running out of time, so I am going to say thanks for tuning in to Alaska Edition once again. And I would like to say a round of thank yous to our guests, Sarah Scanlon, Sue Foley, and Hillary Morgan.
Thank you.
And we will be back next week with another social topic of great interest. And I am your host, Ellen Lockyer.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.